So, well, thank you. So this talk is going to be radically different from the last one. And I come from an astrophysical background, not a particle physics or quantum gravity background particularly. And but so I have, again, interested in solving the issues regarding Hawking radiation. And so, now, if you look at these calculations of the semi-classical stress energy tensor outside the horizon, you find that, well, if Hawking radiation were created by pair creation right at the horizon within Planck length of the horizon, you expect outflow of positive energy from close to the horizon. However, what you actually see in the stress in the semi-classical stress energy tensor is inflow of negative energy near the horizon and outflow of positive energy only at larger radii. And so it looks like something's happening around R equals 3m, where you have stuff going into the black hole and negative energy, and so vacuum, I think it was vacuum fluctuations being distorted by the tidal accelerations in the neighborhood of the black hole, and part going out with positive energy and part going in with negative energy. So, okay, now, then we come to the information paradox. So we have this Bekenstein-Hawking entropy proportion in the area of the black hole. And the so the question then is we have an evaporating black hole whose so at least naively, you have this negative energy and Hawking partners going into the black hole, which are entangled with Hawking partners, the Hawking radiation particles outside going off to infinity. And there, so you get a growing Neumann entropy, entanglement entropy. And the question is, what happens when this entanglement entropy exceeds the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, if it does it. And so it's often claimed that the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is an upper limit to the entanglement entropy, and therefore something has to happen at the page time when they're two are equal. But I'm going to argue that at least there's at least what I consider plausible models of the evolution of the black hole in which that is not the case, that the entanglement entropy can become much larger than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. And now, the other issue is that the existence of an event horizon, another issue related to this, well, this classical GR predicts, given reasonable energy conditions, classical energy conditions, that the horizon of the black hole is an event horizon in the sense that it's the boundary of the past, the future, and all infinity. And also that singularities are inevitable in the interior of the black hole. However, I'm going to argue that quantum back reaction may resolve the singularities in black hole interiors, that and that allows then to consider the evolution of the interior of the black hole going on in a non-singular fashion. And so in particular, the model I want to explore is that the idea that the interior of the black hole smoothly involves without any singularity in the geometry, into a white hole, and all the trapped in quantum information in the black hole flows into the white hole, and then eventually off to infinity again, restoring purity of the quantum state in the space-time with a perfectly, you know, Minkowski type causal structure. Okay, so what I'm going to assume for simplicity, just spherical symmetry, I'm going to assume that that as predicted by semi-classical calculations, that quantum corrections are very small in the vicinity of the horizon, that there's a quasi-classical description of the evolution of geometry with an effective metric which incorporates quantum back reaction in the deep interior of the black hole. And even where the curvature becomes Planckian, that in the semi-classical approximation breaks down, that this quantum back reaction will prevent the curvature from becoming super Planckian. And we can talk about an effective stress tensor defined from the effective metric as an effective stress energy tensor, which is an average over many quantum modes. And as long as the radius is, you're at a radius large compared to the Planck radius, that this doesn't necessarily lead to large quantum fluctuations, because you're averaging over many modes in this average effective stress energy tensor. So, however, when we get down to the radius of the order of the Planck length, of course, then there's no real justification. You certainly expect large fluctuations in the geometry. But I'm still going to consider things in the sort of quasi-classical way, that there is still a metric you can talk about, an effective metric and an effective stress energy tensor. So that's, okay. So the basic scenario then is that the collapsing matter that formed the black hole bounces quickly as measured by advanced time and local proper time outside the collapsing matter, where you just have the first spherical symmetry, a vacuum Schwarzschild metric, classically, that instead of the radius going to zero at a finite proper time, it goes to a minimum value, R equal A, on a space like hypersurface, which separates the interior of the black hole from the interior of the white hole. And so R equal A marks where you make the transition to the white hole. And this is an old idea that's been kicked around by lots of people at various times, and in particular in more recent years, a lot of people in loop quantum gravity have suggested that loop quantum gravity can resolve the singularities, classical singularities. And there have been attempts at talking about models by various more explicit models, particularly by Rovelli and various collaborators. And I will, but what I bring is, which is somewhat new, is to really take seriously the idea of an evaporating black hole. And a lot of the previous work has been based on a Schwarzschild non-evaporating black hole with a constant mass. So this is the Penrose diagram, which describes the scenario I'm considering. So here we have a shell, which I consider as a sort of a thick shell, coming in from past null infinity, and then bouncing again, have to appeal to quantum back reaction to avoid a singularity in the matter, and then bouncing off and going off to future null infinity. And then outside that shell, you have this R equal A surface, hypersurface, space-like hypersurface. And And the black hole evaporates. You have Hawking radiation going out. And then this line here is the black hole horizon. It's not an event horizon because it's not the boundary of the past dilutional infinity. But and then at this place here, we have the claim is that this is where the evaporation of the black hole ends. All trapped surfaces go away. In this region marked black hole, you have trapped two surfaces. And the white hole inside, and then here you have the white hole horizon. So on the white hole side and inside the white hole horizon, you have anti-trap surfaces. So everything has to flow out here and flow in here. And then we have the Hawking partners coming in during quantum information. And then the question is, what happens at Article A? Do they sort of continue on in the white hole, or do they go off to infinity? Now, and we'll see that there are, so that's really the substance of the talk.
What is A?
Well, it's some Planck scale constant, basically.
The Planck.
Yeah. Okay. So what I take as an argument for how you get this sort of geometric structure of the minimum circumference radius. So there's some ticklers that attempt to do a real calculation in loop quantum gravity by Astikor, Almeida, and Singh. That came out a little over a year ago. And they derived an expression for the, so R here is the circumference radius. R is 4 pi R squared is the area of a two-sphere. Which involves the mass of the black hole, capital M, and then gamma L naught and delta C are standard loop quantum gravity parameters. Now, and then the coordinate what they consider is sort of the replacing the Schwarzschild radius as a coordinate is this T variable. And so T goes from T goes to plus infinity or outside the black hole and minus infinity as you go to as you go far outside the white hole on the other side. Now, one thing you can notice is that you can rewrite this in a very simple, much simpler way as R squared is Z squared plus A squared, where Z is a new, different version of the coordinate given by this, and then A squared is just gamma L naught delta CM, according to their calculations. Now, the coordinate Z range, this coordinate Z ranges from minus infinity far outside the black hole to plus infinity far outside the white hole, and it changes sign at the minimum circumferential radius. So it's negative in the black hole, inside the black hole, and positive inside the white hole. So this is just an exact rewriting of this expression. And so I'm going to now assume we have we can talk about a regular metric for the black hole in terms of the coordinate Z and an advanced null coordinate, which is constant along ingoing radial null geodesics. And the form of the metric, general form of the metric, given spherical symmetry, has this form where GZZ inverse, GZZ is the inverse ZZ component of the metric. And then we have this e to the psi sub v, which gives sort of a time dilation effect. So we have this effective metric inside the black hole.
One question. Is this a semi-classical solution to loop quantum gravity, or is it guess?
Well, I'm just saying we can describe what really is a quantum mechanical evolution in terms of the evolution of a metric. And that's what they do, this Astikor et al. Paper.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand if it's a guess or if it's something you get from solving some equations.
Well, so I'm not, haven't said anything about what these, in general, for any circle symmetric geometry, you just, you can describe in terms of two independent metric functions. I'm not, haven't said anything about what those are yet, okay? And I won't really say that much. But anyway, but then we can calculate the effective stress energy tensor given the metric. We can calculate the Einstein tensor, and in circle symmetry, a useful thing to do is consider this quantity, little m, which is the Misner-Sharp mass function. It's a coordinate scalar and defined in terms of the square of the gradient of the circumference radius. And so that's given in terms of that metric on the last slide as z squared over r squared times g inverse cc. So notice that that vanishes at z equals zero or r equal a. All right, so so given these, if we make some assumption about these two metric functions, then we can just calculate the effective stress tensor. And we get expressions in terms of GZZ and psi z. So we have DVV here. This is TVZ, which describes basically the energy flow along ingoing radial-null geodesics. And we have T sub V super Z, which is related to this function psi sub E. And given these three components, then you can get the others, remaining two independent ones in circle symmetry, by an identity for TCZ. And then you can use the conservation of the stress tensor, which of course is identically conserved, given this comes from the Einstein tensor, and to get the transverse stress. Okay, so then what happens at the transition? And this is going to be my primary focus here. Well, I just maybe go back. So in particular, I want you to notice that TVZ vanish goes to zero at z equals zero linearly, which means that TVZ should change sign in any smooth transition across z equals zero. Okay. Now I'm going to say then is that, so we have trapped surfaces in the black hole interior and are trapped in the white hole interior. And z equals zero must be a space-like hypersurface. And that's determined by the sign of this g super zz. So that has to be less than zero for to be space-like, that surface to be space-like. And now, at that endpoint of the black hole evaporation, GZZ should go to zero. And so we, at that point, there are no longer any trapped surfaces in the black hole, or any trapped surfaces in the white hole. So that's the end of the black hole and the beginning of the white hole, is at z equals zero and v equals zero. Okay, inflow of negative energy in the black hole, I'm assuming goes to zero smoothly at v equals zero. So I'm defining the advanced time at the endpoint of the black hole as v equals zero, just as arbitrary. And then, this time derivative of GZZ, which is, if you remember from the last slide, is the t sub vz. Is proportional to this time derivative, and that derivative should vanish at z equals v equals zero. Okay, and now in the white hole, we don't want to use advanced null coordinates because they're singular on the white hole horizon, but so we can switch to retarded null coordinates and talk about a retarded time u, which is constant across the white hole horizon. And now it turns out the metric in retarded coordinates has exactly the same form as the metric in advanced coordinates. And it's continuing to define u to be minus, to normalize this retarded time such that it's equal to minus v at z equals 0. So think of v as being an advanced time, which is basically set at, say, past null infinity. But then I'm setting the retarded time so that at z equals 0, it's just minus the advanced time. And of course, inside the black hole, if given the black hole ends at v equals 0, v is going to be less than 0 inside the black hole, and u is going to be greater than 0 than inside the white hole and outside. So, okay, so, and finally, you can calculate the transformation between the advanced and retarded coordinates, and you get that GZZ is just the same, of course, different function, but the same value at a given point, and either psi u is related simply to psi v in terms of this derivative. And that's equals 0, where in a space like hypersurface, from way we define u relative to v, this dv to u is just minus 1, so the two either psi u is just this is equal there, equal to either psi v is equal to 0. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the flow of energy across this transition. And in terms of a local energy in a, a local inertial frame, or a local a local just north normal frame, not necessarily inertial, we can define a north normal frame which such that the radial basis vector is pointing along that z equals 0 hypersurface away from the collapsing shell. And then the time vector is orthogonal to it and points in the plus z direction. So when you construct, you do that and project out the physical components of the stress energy tensor, you get these expressions, and notice that now in the interior of the black hole, we have F greater than 0 because we have negative energy going in. So we have F and a positive energy. So we have a positive energy flux, but the flow of energy is actually inward because the energy density, you see the energy density with F greater than 0 is there's a negative contribution to the energy density here in terms of dvz. And then in the retarded coordinates, that sign flips so that the energy flux now is, if we had a positive energy flux, we'd have a negative energy. This term would be that means that TuZ then is has the opposite sign at a given point from TvZ. Okay, and remember that GZZ is less than 0 at the transition, so minus GZ is positive. Okay, so now, as I said, the energy TvZ goes linearly to 0 at the transition, and that means that F and T should change sign in going across the transition. And so what was a positive energy flux on the black hole side becomes a negative energy flux on the white hole side. Now, in terms of if you considering the flow along ingoing radial null geodesics, what that means is from here is that when SF changes sign, we now have a positive contribution to the energy density associated with TvZ. And so that we have then that is describing an inflow in terms of the local stress tensor as inflow of positive energy along ingoing radial null sheet Essex inside the void hole. And that may seem strange, but the point is that the Kelling energy of something, locally positive energy propagating along an ingoing radial null sheet Essex in the void hole has the opposite sign. So in other words, this is no way of saying it is that the gravitational potential energy is greater than the rest mass energy. And so the net energy contribution to the energy of the white hole is negative. It's just there's the local positive energy density. And on the other hand, we might have an outflow of negative energy outside the white hole horizon, because in retarded coordinates, if F is negative, we have flowing along ingoing radial null sheet Essex, we have flowing outgoing radial null sheet Essex, then F is, as F is negative, then that means that there's a negative contribution to the energy density. So along outgoing radial null sheet Essex, if there's flow along outgoing radial null sheet Essex in the white hole, that is carrying negative energy. And if that keeps going across the white hole horizon, we have negative energy flowing out to null infinity. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do now is just try to consider what happens right at the end of the black hole and the beginning of the white hole. So I'm going to focus right near that, the end of that red line in the Penrose diagram. And you can argue that given the constraints on GZZ, that very close to that endpoint, GZZ has to have this kind of form. I mean, it has to, again, so it's equal to zero, it has to be negative. So, and we want the first derivative to vanish. So we're saying then it goes, there's a minus a v squared, where a is a positive number of order unity. B is we want GZZ to be increasing away from the deep interior of the black hole. Okay, so now there's a gauge freedom in psi, in the sense that we can, at any given psi v, so here we're really talking about the interior of the black hole still, psi v can be set to zero at any point along a given ingoing radial null sheet Essex. And if we choose to set it to zero at z equals zero, then psi v should, again, possibly increase away from z equals zero, because you expect psi v is a time dilation parameter. We expect time to run slow in the interior of the black hole, which means psi v should increase going away from the deepest interior. And everything here is in the white hole side is the same. We just have to replace v by u. We can then now from this GZZ and this psi v, we can calculate the stress energy tensor, and you get a nice regular expression. I mean, there's no singularity at all at z equals zero, or at z equals v equals zero. So it's a perfectly smooth transition. And finally, the black hole horizon near this end of the black hole, you can, again, it's given by this expression, it's a null hypersurface. This is the null condition in advanced coordinates. And saying at constant retarded time, gives you, in NAS coordinates, gives you an expression for CDV. And you can calculate that from the, from the given expression for GZZ, and we get something that grows as the cube. Z grows as the cube of V, and of course it's negative in the, on the black hole side. Both Z and V are negative on the horizon. And the horizon, now the apparent horizon, is just the condition that GZZ equals zero, and that is goes as square root of A over B times V. And so the apparent horizon, the horizon is inside the apparent horizon, as it is semi-classically for a large black hole. Of course, here we're talking about a very long scale black hole. okay, and also we can see that in this neighborhood of the end of the black hole, that really, if we assume everything is smooth, we really have to have negative energy flowing out across the white hole horizon. And what that does is that increases the mass of the black hole. Now, so then the question then is, how does the white hole evolve? And now, this one option is that this flow of negative energy out across the black white hole horizon, this continues for the lifetime of the black hole. And the white hole ends when the matter shell comes out carrying a large amount of positive energy. And the white hole, if its mass keeps increasing, gets back to essentially the original mass of the black hole. And so everything just goes off to infinity. The white hole disappears, the matter just flows out and carries this large positive energy flux out to infinity. Now, however, this will make a lot of quantum field theorists very uncomfortable, because negative energy flowing in what is an astronomically flat space-time out near future null infinity violates standard results in quantum field theory for the minimum average energy density you could have in Minkowski space, right? So we think of future null infinity being astronomically flat, those theorems should apply asymptotically. And because we have this outflow of negative energy going on for a very long time, the minimum energy density, the minimum negative energy you have, according to this Ford-Raman theorem, gets smaller and smaller, the larger the, so if you calculate the average along some time, freely falling observer, if that average, as you, the time over which you average in this asymptotic region gets very large, then the minimum energy is only very slightly negative. And it's not negative enough to allow for the negative energy that is associated with the outflow of the Hawking partners. All right, so we have to do something. So if you take, unless there's some way in which a black hole space-time is radically different from the Minkowski space-time, even asymptotically, in terms of the quantum field theory, we have to consider something different. And the other option is that the flow of energy across the white hole apparent horizon stops at some point while the white hole still is as sort of a Planck scale mass. And now the white hole with a Planck scale mass doesn't have a lot of energy, positive energy it can radiate. So the only sensible thing to do is say that they just have to freeze. In other words, you have to say that GCC, remember CZ, is doesn't depend on time near the white hole horizon. And the geometry, you know, just becomes static outside the, on and outside the white hole horizon. At some retarded, retarded time, which is a Planck scale retarded time, in other words, you can't wait for some, of course, the if you just, it's the white hole lasts basically for the same time as the entire time as the black hole, as the black hole lasts, which is of order m cubed over m Planck squared. So it's a huge time you have to deal with. So anyway, but then you still have most of the quantum information and the matter shell stuck inside this Planck scale white hole. And the question then is how, what happens when the matter shell emerges. And so you would need then the matter shell coming out of the white hole, the small white hole. And the question is how that works.
James, just to let you know, you have 4 minutes left.
Okay. So the end of the white hole then is when the shell, the matter shell emerges, or the radiation shell that formed the black hole emerges. And now in scenario one, where we've already gotten rid of essentially all the quantum information, you can just say that, that the matter shell comes out and that's the end of the white hole and there's nothing very dramatic happens. Now, on the other hand, in scenario two, what we have is incoming radiological geodesics inside the white hole actually converge on the white hole horizon. So what we expect then is that what happens over this long time that the black white hole exists is that the quantum information associated with the Hawking partners gets concentrated very close to the white hole horizon, forming a kind of shell just right just sort of intensely inside the white hole horizon. And if we think of the outcoming matter as also a null shell, then we can use an old result of Dre and De Hooft to calculate constraints this what happens when these shells intersect. And these are going to intersect at a radius which is just infinitesimally less than the radius of the white horizon, and assuming that the outflow of negative energy lasted long enough that the white hole horizon is essentially, the geometry there is essentially Schwarzschild, then this R naught should be just infinitesimally less than the Schwarzschild radius, which is twice M1, where M1 is this residual mass of the white hole. And then you get this expression, and you get the M2, so the mass inside, so these are just Schwarzschild geometries between the shells, and we have zero mass here because assuming the matter shell is just takes all the matter with it, we have this Planck scale mass of the white hole M1 on this side, and here we have something that's like the original mass of the black hole, at least more or less. And then the question is, then what is this M2? And one can calculate that that's, so epsilon is the shells cross. So this epsilon is some infinitesimal sub-Planck value. And so R naught is essentially slightly less. M2 is just very slightly less than what M1. And but then we have this shell now will have M2 is positive. And so this is an ingoing shell with positive mass, and that forms a black hole, right? So we form a little mini Minkowski-Hell black hole, and the outgoing shell turns out to have almost nothing left. I mean, it's infinitesimal Planckian mass. All right, so so what happens to this black hole? Well, it'll evaporate quickly because it's Planck scale, and if quite possibly will just evaporate completely. It would turn into a white hole, which then would evaporate completely, emitting a little more negative energy, but not in a way that would violate this Ford-Roman asymptotic condition. So, okay, so that's the basic options in the model. I want to say a few words about entropy. So we have the Neumann entropy increasing steadily as the black hole evaporates, continuing past the page time. The Bechstein-Hagen entropy steadily decreases as the black hole loses mass and goes becomes very small at the end. And then, so in this model, then the Bechstein-Hagen entropy might be considered the number of quantum acoustic data residing on the black hole horizon. It certainly can't be the case that it's the total degrees of freedom associated with the black hole, including the black hole interior, and the so the Hawking. And the part, what happens to the Hawking partners, which are carrying the entanglement, they just go into the white hole. And if we look at, now when that R equals zero hypersurface, you can calculate the volume of that. And it turns out that it's a huge volume because all the, it's a sort of cylindrical spacetime with a Planck scale two spheres, but then over along Z is, it goes for a huge proper distance. And it turns out that it possibly there's never more than one, even though we have this huge entanglement entropy, there's never more than one degree of freedom per Planck volume in that transition, on that transition hypersurface. And so this is just a reminder that, and the point is that what's going on here, in other words, the degrees of freedom coming in, and whether or not they sustain white hole or go off to infinity, they have nothing to do with what's going on here. It's a space-like separation. And there's no way in which you can think of the black, the final state near the end of the black hole as being in any kind of thermal equilibrium with the black hole interior. Okay, so to wrap up then. so I've taken then a resolution of the Schwarzschild singularity suggested by Dupont of gravity, which allows a black hole to evolve into a white hole and potentially resolves the information paradox, though with some possible issues to work out. And so I've described how the transition works in some detail in a way which is really independent of what I want to assume elsewhere, away from the transition, about the, how GZZ and Psi sub V and Psi U behave. But the evolution of the white hole raises serious questions, which I've discussed. And now an interesting question then is whether the quantum information that's stored in the white hole can leak out as vacuum correlations across the white hole horizon without any flow of energy. involved. This would be a way of getting rid of the von Neumann entropy gradually over the lifetime of the white hole without worrying about having negative large amounts of negative energy going off to future null infinity. And of course, all of this is very conjectural because you really have to do a quantum gravity calculation, which I have no idea how to do. So anyway, that's the end. Anyway.
I'm trying to see what you're saying. I'm trying to understand in my own language. And it means that I was comparing, maybe you do not look very carefully at the exponential behaviors, the very high exponentials independent of the time.
Well, so.
Okay, if you do that, then this red line that you draw on your Planck diagram just shrinks and goes very close to the Planck scale. So that everything happens very close to the Planck scale.
Well, so it's true that as measured in sort of a local freely falling frame near, the black hole horizon, that then you need a supply of modes to be propagating along the black hole horizon, very close to the black hole horizon, which eventually, by the tidal effects, start coming out.
I can't get a way to understand how deep.
So there's an exponentially increasing redshift right there. Now, one thing you can say is that this is, if you just take a null hypersurface in flat space-time, Minkowski space-time, so it's basically a Rindler horizon, right? It's just any null hypersurface in flat space-time. You have the same thing if you consider, if you look at things from the point of view of an accelerating frame. So an accelerating frame, the accelerated observer in terms of the inertial coordinate, the regular Minkowski coordinates, the inertial observer gets infinitely close to the horizon, exponentially close to the horizon as you go into the future. So any mode, that, vacuum mode, say that this is propagating normally along the horizon in terms of Minkowski coordinates, will end up being much larger than the distance in the accelerating frame between the horizon and the observer. So now in the case of the white hole, it seems more serious because you have exponentially increasing blue shifts along the white hole horizon. But that's also just essentially by looking at things from an accelerating frame rather than an inertial frames. Of course, you only have local inertial frames, of course.
The short question is, you should try to see if you can count microstates and can describe the evolution of the black hole in terms of the evolution of these microstates. My claim that basically succeeded in doing that, and a method that helps very much in understanding what's going on is to do a spherical harmonic expansion of all the momenta going in and all the momenta going out. The spherical harmonics, it turns out that different components of the spherical harmonics do not have crosstalk to each other. So it's all diagonalizes once you go to spherical harmonics, and then you just see what you have to do. It's just basically undergraduate quantum mechanics that you have to solve.
Well, so, and that's what, the point is just the normal Hawking radiation.
If you say that there are
modes on the, they come from modes that are propagating along the horizon.
I suggest that since we are kind of half an hour late, should we continue this discussion over lunch? Because I
suspect
it
will
take a while.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.